Good morning, friends. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child. Only kidding. When I was a child, being an introvert, I was quite happy to spend time playing on my own. To say that I had a rich inner life going on in my tiny head is an understatement. My mum was very happy because I never had to be entertained. I never got bored, and I still don't get bored. You could stick me on a desert island and I wouldn't get bored. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I used to sometimes imagine what it would be like to lose or not have one of my senses. It had more to do with feeling empathy for those who had lost one or more of their senses than just being curious. For example, we had a swimming pool in our back garden, which isn't uncommon in South Africa, and I would sink to the bottom of the pool and close my eyes, and in so doing, shut out any noise from the outside world. It felt surreal. As kids, we would think being blind was just like shutting your eyes, so we would do so every now and then to simulate what it might have been like, in our minds anyway, not to have one's sight. When my dad was ill with Alzheimer's and had suffered a number of strokes, he lost his sense of smell completely. So that something South Africans love to do is socialize in one another's homes around food. We love the company, but we love good food as well. Losing his sense of smell meant losing his sense of taste. I try to imagine what that must have been like. It's just as well we are adaptable as human beings. I always marvel at people who have some form of disability, yet find a way of working through it and with it. Having said all of this, we are going to begin this morning's message by considering a healing story. I think all the healing stories in the Gospels are moving, but I find the story we are going to consider today particularly moving, probably because of the conversation Jesus had with the person being healed. In the Synoptic Gospels, the side-by-side Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we read of Jesus healing the blind man near Jericho as he passed through that town just before his passion. In the Gospel according to Mark chapter 10, and from verse 46, we read the story of a man named Bartimaeus, literally the son of Timaeus. We are told that as Jesus was leaving Jericho with his followers in tow, there was a blind beggar sitting by the side of the road. As Jesus passed by, the man shouted, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." We are told that the crowd who was with Jesus told the man to keep quiet, to stop making a racket. Let's pause for a moment and imagine we were that blind man. Who knows how long we had sat by the road and there was never any relief. Day after day after day, we would sit in our filth, relying on the kindness of strangers, not being able to see a thing, not even blackness. Our eyes may as well have been hands. Perhaps we were born blind from birth, so could only imagine what things and other people might have looked like. And then somehow the news even filtered down to us. Maybe someone shouted to a friend that Jesus of Nazareth was going to be passing by. And maybe someone had explained who they thought he was. Perhaps the person attached to the voice may have seen or heard about things Jesus was supposed to have done. That he healed people, that he was a healer and could do amazing things. And with some excitement rising in our heart, we might have thought, if he could heal others and have mercy on them, maybe, just maybe, he would have mercy on me. Imagine the anticipation in that man's heart and soul. He could only rely on the noise of the crowd to have any idea that Jesus was near. And he would have had to have chosen his moment very carefully. He would have to shout at the top of his lungs to be heard. To hell with what other people would think of him. And when Jesus came, when he thought the time was right, he let rip, shouting at the top of his voice, making such a din that those respectable followers of Jesus and the hangers-on were very unimpressed, staring at the blind beggar with disdain. How dare such a decrepit human being call out the name of Jesus? How dare he call him the son of David? He should have known his place. I like to think that when Jesus heard this voice from the blue and turned round to see who was calling him, he did so for three reasons. One was obvious, someone was calling his name. The other was the fact that not only was the person calling his name, but they knew exactly who he was, that he was the Messiah, the son of David. And thirdly, because whoever was crying out was in obvious need. I like to imagine that when Jesus told those who were with him to bring the man to him, that silence fell upon the crowd. The kind of silence that we see in Western movies when two gunslingers face each other on a dusty street and only the tumbleweeds move. Why on earth was Jesus paying this old blind beggar any attention? Surely there were far more important things to be getting on with. After all, Jerusalem was around the corner. Wasn't that much more important? We're told that those who went up to the man to take him to the master let him know that Jesus had heard him. "Take heart," they said to him. "Get up, he's calling you." What did the blind beggar do when they told him that? Well, according to the author of the Gospel, according to Mark, the man got up and threw aside the one material possession he had in the whole wide world. And when he stood before Jesus, Jesus asked him a question that we heard 2 weeks ago. "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man replied, "Teacher," or "Rabbi, let me see again." Isn't it fascinating that the man somehow knew that Jesus was the one who could enable him to see? He didn't say, "I'd really like to see again." He said, "Teacher, Rabbi, let me see again." In other words, just say the word and I will see. I know that you have the authority and the power to give me sight again. And Jesus said to the man, "Go, your faith has made you well." We are told that Bartimaeus immediately regained his sight, and he didn't disappear into the sunset. Instead, he followed Jesus on the way. In other words, we might say, he became a disciple of Jesus. He became a follower of Christ. Now, having heard all of this, there are some really important points we have to take away from the story, because it wasn't just a story about a random healing. There's a lot going on here theologically that we have to understand, remembering that the Gospels were written to communities to instruct them about who Jesus was, not just simple reporting about some of the activities in Jesus' life. Firstly, you might want to ask why Bartimaeus was actually named in the story, because very few people who were healed were ever named. So why was Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, named? Well, according to a quick glance at Wikipedia, some scholars understand the person of Bartimaeus as a reference to a historical person, but others also see a special significance of the story in the figurative reference to someone from a treatise written by the philosopher Plato, a man named Timaeus, who delivered Plato's most important cosmological and theological treatise, in which he believed that sight was the foundation of all knowledge. "The sight, in my opinion," said Timaeus, "is the source of the greatest benefit to us. For had we never seen the stars and the sun and the heaven, none of the words which we have spoken about the universe would have ever been uttered. But now, the sight of day and night, and the months and the revolutions of the years have created number and have given us a conception of time and the power of inquiring about the nature of the universe. And from this source we have derived philosophy, that which no greater good ever was or will be given by the gods to mortal man. This is the greatest boon of sight and of the lesser benefits. Why should I speak?" Secondly, the author of Mark's Gospel uses this story to advance a clear theological purpose. You might ask, well, what theological purpose? Well, who Jesus is, and also the proper way to respond to him. You see, the Son of David wasn't just a name. It was, as I mentioned briefly, a messianic name. And thus, Bartimaeus' exclamation, "Son of David," was, according to the author of Mark, the first public acknowledgement of the Christ after Peter's confession in Mark chapter 8. Put another way, what we witness in the story is a journey that for Jesus was always going to end at the cross. The story of blind Bartimaeus is a calling to follow the way of Jesus because Jesus is the Messiah, a calling to follow the way of Jesus because Jesus is the one who gives sight to a world gone blind. Jesus is the one who gives us eyes to see. By throwing off his cloak, Bartimaeus gave up every possession he had in the world to put his entire trust in Jesus, exactly what Jesus calls us to do. We are called to respond to Jesus in faith, to leave our possessions behind and concentrate our hearts and minds and souls on him, because when we do, we are given new sight. The old has gone forever, and the new has come. It's important to note, though, that although this is wonderful, we're also called to understand that the journey to Jerusalem for Jesus ended at the cross, and of course resurrection, that we too are called to lay down our lives in order for them to be taken up again. What does this mean? In simple terms, to have Christ at the forefront of our lives, above all other things, above everything else. In the Gospel according to John chapter 9, we hear of another healing that Jesus performed. We are told that as Jesus walked along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi or teacher, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind from birth?" In those days, it was a legitimate question, as we know that Jesus and his disciples lived in a culture that believed if a person suffered from some form of malady, then that malady was a form of punishment from God for sins that had been committed either by the person themselves or by someone in their family. Some form of punishment would be meted out by God to teach people a lesson. We witness this idea clearly in the book of Job. When Job's mates arrived to comfort him, they immediately assumed the reason why Job had lost everything and was suffering dreadfully was because he had sinned terribly against God. They could not get their heads around the fact that Job claimed to be innocent. It was beyond their comprehension that he had done nothing wrong. But Jesus taught his disciples an important lesson by telling them that neither the man nor his parents had sinned, that instead, God's grace and compassion, God's works, would be seen in this man's life. Again, friends, Jesus is portrayed as light. "As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world," he said to his disciples. We are told that after saying this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva, and then he spread it on the man's eyes. Perhaps he was just checking that the guy was really blind by threatening to rub mud made with saliva in his eyes. It doesn't sound too delightful. After he had done that, he told the man to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. Seriously, why did Jesus spit on the ground and make mud with the saliva? Surely he could have simply told the man to open his eyes and see. Well, there are a number of what I believe are valid answers to this question. Firstly, mud was a symbol of origin and fertility. And according to Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, it was the cause of life in terms of what God created Adama or man from. Out of the dust of the earth, we are told. Theologically, in a Trinitarian sense, this points to Jesus being there at the genesis of creation. "In the beginning was the Word," Jesus, John tells us, "and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him." In other words, Jesus had power and authority over such things, being the one through whom all things came into being. It can get complicated. Secondly, we are told that once again, Jesus healed someone on the Sabbath. By taking mud and rubbing it on the blind man's eyes, Jesus was working. He did something that he wasn't supposed to do. And again, Jesus challenged the religious authorities to look past their traditions. According to their traditions, one couldn't knead dough on the Sabbath. And the word for dough happens to be identical to the word for mud, which is pelon. Ultimately, Jesus wanted them to know that the one they were looking at was the Lord of the Sabbath. Unfortunately, they didn't agree. And finally, we might conclude that God also uses earthly means in doing God's work in the world. In other words, God doesn't despise the physical world as some Christians have often thought and believed. God uses food to sustain life. God uses the means of sex to beget children, and God uses 1,000 remedies to bring about healing, from, as one commentator listed, sleep to penicillin, from vitamins to radiation, from sunshine for our skin to cough syrup for our sore throats. When we start peeling the layers off the onion of life, if our hearts and minds and souls are alive and humble and worshipful, we'll not stop until we understand that God is at the bottom of all things. What happened to the man born blind? He went off to the pool of Siloam and washed his eyes, and he could see. Again, Jesus is the way to sight. And again, the poor man was subject to a barrage of questions, and again, rather wonderfully, the man had little idea about who Jesus was, nor where he was. The religious authorities even questioned his parents, who were petrified of them, and told them that their son was old enough to stand on his own two feet. They also accused Jesus of being a sinner, and in one wonderful verse, the former blind man said to them, "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. And that's the thing about Jesus. Once you encounter Jesus, your life is never the same again. When I gave my life to Jesus as a teenager, I knew in my heart that something profound had taken place in my life, and it was never going to be the same again. And any trepidation I might have had soon gave way to a sense of excitement and anticipation, I believe, just like the disciples must have felt when Jesus told them to follow him, just like the blind men Jesus healed and who followed him on the way. That is what these stories are telling us. Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus is the Lord of all things. God is compassionate and wants to heal us and transform our lives. We have to put our trust not in our own faith, but in Jesus' capacity for compassion and love. That when we come to him weary and heavy laden and take his yoke upon ourselves, he will always bring us peace. Friends, may we be given the eyes to see and hearts that are open to respond to the love of God in Jesus Christ. May God bless you. Amen.